I wonder if anyone has ever stayed together because they said they couldn't do that to the dog.
Well, that's stupid.
Why is it stupid?
Because that's just like saying you should stay together for the kids. You wrote an article entitled "You Can't Stay Together for the Kids."
You can't think everything I write is is truth.
It's not.
Rolling.
I came here on a golden rocket.
You never listen to me.
Leaving out a magic carpet and now.
Divorce sucks.
It's what you do this time.
We don't like each other.
He doesn't like me. I like him.
I'm Serge.
I'm Monica.
We were married for almost 9 years. We're divorced now.
We live four doors down from each other.
We have three kids.
You're not being very nice to me.
This is our story of divorce and life after divorce. Our ex-life.
Our ex-life.
You want a drink? I want a drink, too.
Do you remember the first time I met Max?
Funny you bring that up. Wasn't it at the airport?
I think it was.
I met you in a trench coat and boots and nothing underneath, and I flashed you at the airport when you got off the plane. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. That was the first time I met Max, too. Oh, my gosh. What a day.
Didn't we go back
to the... What a way to land a plane, y'all.
But didn't we go back to the car and hook up, and Max was in the car?
Probably. I think we did, yeah.
That's right. That's when you met Max. That's funny.
Salt Lake International. Man, that was the day of days.
Wait, so that was, so we had met in August, and that was, and then we'd communicated, and I drove to Texas to see you play with your band, and then that was the first time you were flying to see me after that?
Yep.
Yeah.
So. And the thing is, like, from the beginning, one of the real selling points, that's a terrible term for me to apply.
Selling points of me? Oh, my God.
But
were my selling points, Serge?
Max was a big one. The fact that, I mean, you were beautiful and you blew my mind in all the right ways, but on top of it all was this black lab of a cherry that you said that you have this black lab named Max. And that he was your best friend. And I could tell, you know, right away. We had spent one night together on this earth, and you had talked quite a bit about him.
I think I sent you an email after we met in Salt Lake City, and you continued on tour into, I think, Portland. And I had sent you an email, and I said something about Max in the email.
Yeah, and I remember, like...
Oh, I said I have something about my big dog. I have a big dog. Small dogs are for the highly strung.
Right.
It was like the days with...
Which was perfect. I thought that was so good.
It was like Paris Hilton and tiny chihuahua days where they'd carry dogs around in their purses and stuff.
Right.
And so I was like, I hate small dogs.
And I remember, like, texting you in the early days of text messaging, and I said, what does a girl in Utah do on her day off from work?
She takes a ride with her dog and listens to Darkness on the Edge of Town by Bruce Springsteen.
Right.
I remember that
exchange.
And
you said it was a ride, like, up into the mountains. And
yes.
I was like, holy shit.
I remember that ride. I wanted to pull over. What song came on? And I wanted to hear, what is it, Racing in the Street? What ends that?
Yeah. Racing in the Street.
Racing in the Street. And I pulled over and I was listening to that song in a parking lot in, like, Park City with Max sitting there looking at me.
So you really were listening to that album.
Yeah. We had an exchange and I told you to go buy an album that exemplifies me. And I told you what album to buy. Do you remember what album?
Right. It was like Blink 182 or some shit.
Do you not remember what album?
Wilco.
Which album?
Summer Teeth?
No. It was my all-time favorite Wilco album, Yankee Hotel Foxtrot.
Oh, right. Okay.
And you told me to go buy Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Right.
Did you even buy the... You didn't even listen to them.
I already owned that record, yeah. but I'm probably, maybe I told you I went out and bought
it. Which was very weird because I was reading an autobiography, not an autobiography. I was reading a biography about Wilco at the time that mentioned your band.
Right.
But I had just met you. I'd never heard of your band when I met you. And then after I met you, like 3 days later, I'm like, holy shit, that's the band.
Right.
And that was weird. Anyway,
and
Max.
And that was the beginning of everything, right? And so then, shortly after that, we moved to New York City. We barely knew each other.
No, you came and stayed when I gave up my condo. I sold my condo, moved in with my mom's house to prepare to move to Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
And you came to stay with me for a little while. And you and Max would go hiking in the mountains with my mom's dog, Spliffy.
Yes. It was the first time in my adult life that I had a dog involved in my world. And touring with the band and living in Philadelphia, in the city, it just had never even crossed my radar. I had forgotten all about the power and the glory of a dog.
Yeah.
And right away, because I'm a dog guy, you know, I don't care about cats at all. I they're fine, but I'm a dog guy to the bone.
Me too.
And Max was just, I can't even, to this day, all these years later, I can't even describe in the English language the way he changed my life from the beginning. And I owe that to you. You know, he was your guy. You picked him out, which sometimes makes me a little bummed.
So I got him in 2003, I want to say. And or maybe 2002, and we met in 2004. So he was
about a year, I think.
He was a year and a half.
Okay.
He was born in 2003, and I had him for about a year and a half, and then you met him. So he was still a puppy. What is your middle name, Charlie?
Pee-pee Bite.
Pee-pee Bite?
The Pee-pee Buddy.
Pee-pee Buddy?
Yeah.
Charlie Pee-pee Buddy Belunco?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
What's your middle name?
Fart.
Fart?
Yeah.
Charlie Fart Belunco?
Yeah.
Oh, come on. Tell Mama your middle name. What's your middle name? Bumming me out.
I say climbing.
Charlie Climbing Belunco?
Yeah.
You're not going to tell me your middle name?
And I wonder how many times that happens, where someone meets someone else and they begin a thing, and one of them has a pet or a dog.
That becomes both of their
that
pet.
So vital, such a vital part of their life, like for both people.
Right.
Whether that clicks, and it's...
And then in the breakup, who gets the dog? It's the person that got the dog originally, I would guess.
Right.
Or I was thinking about this. Like, it is a thing. It's like a custody thing. When you get a divorce, who gets the family
right.
pet?
And we'll get there. Let's get there. But let's take a moment just to sort of think about our Max and to kind of, I don't know, just reflect in a way for this episode about how he did walk alongside us. I mean, when we married each other, we also married Max in many ways, you know?
Do you remember I wore his collar as a garter on my thigh?
Yeah.
We have pictures of me wearing a dog collar as a garter.
And from that get-go, like, again, as a touring musician, my life was just constant going and chaos. And we stayed that first few months together at your mom's house.
We slept, me, you, and that big bastard in a twin bed at my mom's house every night. Do you remember that?
Yeah. And I was just, I felt like I was in this dream. Like I had married
the most beautiful woman in the world.
Yeah, well, yeah, I was enamored and I was enchanted. And here I was in like the most unexpected place in the West with the mountains towering above in the most conservative county probably in America, Utah County. And we're living at your mom's house as we save up money and get ready to move to New York City. All within the first, you know, we've maybe known each other a total of 25 days, you know, together. And
when we got married, no, we knew each other. We spent like 5 days in Salt Lake and then we spent maybe 4 days in Texas. I mean, we got married after knowing each other for like less than 2 weeks.
I know, but we have to at least stick with 25. Otherwise, it really seems like we're insane.
We are insane. We got married. We knew each other for like 14 days and we got married.
and there, like at that kind of launching pad for our life together, there in Utah County, which is a very, very beautiful place and a very bizarre place at the same time, I just concentrated on Max and Spliffer, your other dog that you had since you were like, I don't know, five.
Who just he was lived 18 forever. Years old or something when you met him.
But you
spent a lot of time with them. I would go to work all day.
That's it.
And you would hike in the mountains with the dogs.
I would sit and write songs, and then we would go for these hikes that became a massive part of my life, like hiking with Max in the foothills of Utah, and then later on in New York City and in Pennsylvania. But in Utah especially, when it was all starting out, he took me across some sort of bridge in my life that I didn't even think possible. And I used to walk him up around 2:30 in the afternoon on these autumn days, and him and Spliffer, and I would cut their leashes, and they would literally raise hell in those foothills,
you
chasing mule deer.
Go miles up the mountain, and then you would see flocks of deer run.
Yeah, I will never ever forget. I mean, I know ethically it was wrong.
Why? They didn't hurt anything.
No, I don't know what they would have done if they would have caught.
They would have stood there stupidly.
But watching them, it was. I often would compare it to almost like I was in the audience at a theater program at a show where I'm sitting down there in the front row, and this entire mountainside is the stage set. And every now and then, Spliffer and Max would appear, like a half a mile up the mountain, like running. And then I would see like all these trees, and then way out in front of them, I would see this massive mule deer buck running for its life.
Isn't that what you wrote, Wilderness? You kind of based your song Wilderness.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And
in that period of time.
And you mentioned Max in Coughing Up Blood.
Mm-hmm.
You wrote a bunch of songs that have him in them in some ways.
I was bleeding from the mouth when I came down from the mountains. There were briars in my hair, lion tracks on my back. Something happened to me, something wild, something beautiful. I got zapped by some sort of Moses hand, shooting lightning from a sausage thumb.
You know, Max, through our New York years in Brooklyn.
Do you remember how we used to let him go in the East River and we would freak out because he would get way far out, like halfway back to Manhattan?
Yeah.
And we were afraid the current would take him away because he was just paddling. Hey, see you later.
Yeah.
Or I remember I would get in fights with you or whatever when we lived in Brooklyn, and I would just take him and go walking, and I'd walk right into Manhattan and up to Central Park. I walked all over Manhattan with that dog by myself.
Our life there in Brooklyn was pretty amazing when you look back on it, because we were living in very small quarters together, just the three of us.
Mm.
And Max was a big dog, you know, for a small, tiny New York City apartment. And he really couldn't exercise his energy in the house. And he was a very gentle guy, but even him trying to turn around, do like a 180 in the living room,
serious
would
business.
Would mean he knocked over like a lot of books and pictures and stuff off the shelves, I remember. And he would have this look on his face of almost like self-conscious, like, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry.
Or do you remember always coming home and he'd be hanging out the window? You'd walk by and you'd see his chin on the windowsill waiting for us to come home.
Oh, gosh, yeah. And now I look back on it and I can't help. I mean, I just look at it as a magic time and as an amazing thing that came with you and I falling in love and you and I being married and you and I being together. And it was more than I could have ever even hoped to bargain for. Through it all, you know, through Violet being born, and I remember coming home from the hospital, I did all this like research and on the internet, like, what am I supposed to do? How do we make sure that Max doesn't feel, you know, weird about having a baby come home?
It's all right, buddy.
Welcome home there, sugar beet. Hey, Max. Come here. Come on up, Max. Good boy. Good boy. He doesn't even want to put it in his mouth. In his mouth. No way.
Yeah. Smell the foot. That's a good boy.
Oh, he smells poop and then he'll...
Yeah, that's a good boy. You can smell the poop.
Yeah.
So please keep the light on and open up some wine. I got postcards of the places I've seen. And rest your weary eyes till that dog begins to bark. And roll over and slip into your jeans. I'll be home when them songbirds sing again.
Do you think that, you know, in the time before we had kids... I know it's a stretch, but then again, maybe it's not. Like, maybe our ability to love a life like Max so much together and to coexist so much together and to be in each other's lives so much together, do you feel like that was in any way, shape, or form a sign that we would be good parents?
Yeah, He made us feel like a family, I think. Not that couples aren't a family, but, like, he made it feel like that complete family with a baby.
Right.
Because we used to, like, celebrate his birthday and buy him cakes and sing to him.
Yeah.
Do you remember that shitty motel room?
Christmas gifts. Christmas
in Nebraska.
Stocking.
Oh, we'd get him a Christmas stocking, and we would be more excited to open his Christmas stocking than our own.
Yeah.
And remember I think we were moving to Brooklyn in that motel room in Nebraska, North Platte, Nebraska.
Uh-huh.
Shitty motel room.
Yeah.
And we sang him happy birthday, and he was so excited.
Yeah.
So stupid. But yeah, no, definitely. Like, he was like the precursor to children, where we knew we were this united team that loved our baby, and we took care of him.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday.
And those Brooklyn years, like oftentimes in Williamsburg back then, I'm sure even now, you know, not that many people had dogs that were running with our crowd. You know, everyone was kind of young,
like single, and getting drunk,
artsy, and doing their thing, you know, and a dog was kind of a lot of work. And here we showed up
with our big lug
on Bury Street with this big old black lab. And I remember being concerned because I'm like, where are we going to
keep him?
Yeah. And where are we going to walk him?
Oh my God.
How's that
going
to be? Like, he's not going to be able to chase mule deer.
No, but you know what I just thought of that I haven't thought of in so long? So I'm going to kind of describe it for people listening. We had this ground floor apartment and it had this door that opened up into the kitchen from the shitty hallway. So But we were lucky enough, and this is amazing in Brooklyn, to have this back window that opened up onto a tiny little courtyard that we really didn't have access to. The neighbor did. Her back door opened onto the courtyard, but we would open the window and let Max out, and he would go in and out of the window and play.
It was a full-on yard. It was a yard.
I forgot him going in and out of the window. Mm-hmm. One of my all-time...
But I think we kind of had to sneak him out there, right? Like, and if he took a shit, we'd have to go out and
clean it up. But one of my all-time favorite photos of him was in, like, this major blizzard of, like, 2005. And he's in the backyard, but peeking back inside from that window.
I know, exactly. And his ears are kind of up in the
air. Quirky ears.
Because he's jumping.
Oh, I love that photo. But it just reminded me, every time I go to Brooklyn now, remember when they were redoing the sidewalk in front of the house? And I wanted to go out there and carve our names. And you're, like, this law abider. You're like, no, you can't do that. And I went out. I waited till the workmen were gone, and I went out with a stick, and I carved S plus M and Max into the sidewalk. And every time I go back
to Brooklyn, it's still
there? It's still there. I visit it every goddamn time I go back.
You sent me a picture of that the last, or one of the times you were there, I remember now.
Of the sidewalk with our name. It's still there, 151 Berry Street. If you live in Brooklyn and you go to 151 Berry Street, look on the sidewalk in front of the apartment building, and you'll see S plus M and Max.
Is that what it says?
Yeah.
Does it have a date?
No, I just put S plus M, and then I wrote Max.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, Max. I needed a reason to walk down the street,
more than the ground moving under my feet. Hey, I need a do you know what your middle name is? What's your middle name? Wait, what's your middle name?
Charlie Maximus Blanco.
How come we called you Maximus?
Because you did.
Who are you named after? Whose name was Max?
Max the dog.
Do you remember Max the dog?
Never met him before. I met you.
We had him when you were a baby.
I was a baby.
Yeah. He snuggled you right when you were born. They put you on my bed and he snuggled with you.
But we watched TV.
I don't remember, buddy. Probably not. We were probably listening to records. When you were born, Max was there. And we got into Mommy's bed and we all snuggled. Me and you and Daddy and Max and Milo.
Change. Give me a dollar and I'll say it again. Here comes nothing.
Do you remember the time he ran across the tennis courts at McCarran Park and I saw him eating something?
He was eating a homeless guy's shit.
He was eating a human shit.
I started the gag thing.
He would chase pigeons and eat people's crap.
Aww.
That's adapting, man. That's how he went from a rural life to a city life.
That was a one-time crap eating. And it, like, ugh.
Nothing will make you a true New Yorker like if you eat a homeless guy's poop.
The topic that I think a lot of people can relate to specifically regarding pets is like who gets a pet when you divorce and in many cases it defaults to a particular individual because you rented a place that doesn't allow dogs. So I got both dogs. And then that becomes a weird thing for you where it's not even like they're not yours anymore, but they are yours and you see them in these brief moments. And that was probably a very difficult thing to deal with.
It was the whole situation with Max and Milo was terribly tragic, for me, speaking candidly. It was another missile that was fired in the midst of everything that was happening directly into my face.
Well, it wasn't fired at you by anyone. if you rented a place where they allowed dogs, you could have had them. I would have shared them with you.
Yeah, I guess.
So it's not, you but guess. When I mean, what do you mean?
But when I think like back to that point in time and what I was going through, and I can only speak for me, but I do remember thinking like, how can this all be ending? How can, you know, we have a baby on the way. How can this all be ending? And these two little kids and then Max and Milo on top of everything else, like, isn't that enough? You know, I remember just thinking all the time, like, isn't that enough? And
isn't what enough?
Enough to make it not end, you know?
That, well, that's a whole other discussion that you're
I know. I'm just saying, but so the weight, I'm trying to express the weight of their lives in our lives, in my life, and how hard it was, you know, in the midst of divorce. And when people do go through that, and I reacted very quickly because I had to get a place. There was this entire question floating in the air.
I felt offended that you rented a place that didn't allow pets.
Yeah.
You didn't. I would have shared them with you, but you didn't. You
I
just
know you
kind
would've.
Of. And it's very difficult to rent a place that allows two giant dogs. So it left a whole thing in my world where, you know, I think a lot of people get a divorce and one person maintains the house that they both lived in. And kind of maybe that person defaults to keeping the pet, maybe.
Right.
But in our case, we both moved from the house. And you quickly rented a place in Milheim where that didn't allow pets. So it immediately, that settled any sort of discussion over who was keeping the dog.
Right. But I also, like, I had to get a place. Like, I had to get out of my mom's house. It was just a question of, you know, literally survival. And honestly, looking back on it, in my mindset at the time, I wasn't even sure that I would be in this place very long at all. Like, I just needed to get into a place, pay my deposits, have a place where the kids could come and be with me and start my life out in as a separated, divorced guy. Dad.
His avocado-sized paws smelled like corn chips, and sometimes hay. We would exchange several looks throughout the course of a day to check in with each other, ascertain each other's moods. How you doing? You're good? We good? We're good. We slept together, watched TV together, took road trips together. We did everything together. Max was the dog for me. If you're lucky in life, you get one of those, the dog. The one who is your everything. Best friend, lover, therapist, child, soulmate. The first dog you get when you're old enough to live on your own, but young enough that you still have some growing up to do. It's just you and the dog, and you belong only to each other, and the relationship changes you and shapes who you become. And yeah, there will be other dogs, but there will never be another like the dog. The one who was there for all of it. The one you grew up with. It's a once-in-a-lifetime deal, I think. Max was my longest relationship with a boy, nearly 12 years together, in my bed for thousands of nights, and I liked hearing him snore. He is the great love of my life, truly. I bought him from someone in Utah when he was a tiny little guy, and he was by my side for the next decade. He knew me more intimately than anyone else drawing breath on this planet. He'd lie on the bathroom floor while I showered, followed me while I cleaned the house, sat shotgun for countless car rides, and watched me have sex more than I care to admit. He barked with annoyance at the various men I brought home, and he was always right. They never lasted. But I eventually wore his dog collar as a garter when I got married to the only guy he never barked at. From splashing around in the Great Salt Lake to swimming in New York City's East River and dipping his paws in the Washington Square Fountain in the Village, he's chased deer in the Utah Mountains and crossed the Williamsburg Bridge and the Queensboro Bridge countless times on foot and by taxi, and I only now realize and regret never walking across the Brooklyn Bridge with him. For those first years of our marriage, he wedged his 100-pound body between me and Serge in this shitty little double bed, the only size that would fit in our tiny railroad apartment in Brooklyn. If you sat on the couch against one wall, you could lean forward and change the channel of the TV situated against the opposite wall. Like I said, tiny, but we dug it. The bed was jammed up to a steel bar-covered window that looked out onto the street. Max would lie on that bed, chin resting on the windowsill of 151 Berry Street, apartment 1B, watching hipsters stroll past, and when he spotted us, he'd disappear from the window and rush to the door to greet us.
He was sitting at the window of our home in Salt Lake City when we brought our daughter back from the hospital and was there to welcome our first son. He rode shotgun in the moving truck from Utah to Pennsylvania and was in the same room in our old farmhouse, our last home before divorce, while we laughed and cried as our Charlie Max took his first breath of air. It happens fast, the end, nearly imperceptible at first. Joyful frisking gradually dissolves into a tired amble. Instead of excitedly welcoming me home with leaps and licks, a tired thump of the tail became all he could muster. But his eyes, oh, those expressive eyes. Instead of him dancing excitedly around my legs, I would get down onto the floor to lie next to him and rub his bony body.
Oh,
nose to nose, I looked into those eyes and told him how much I loved him, what a good boy he was, and how important he is to my existence. I apologized for not taking him on walks as much after the kids were born, but told him that I always loved him just the same. More even, for gently tolerating all the ear and tail pulls from the very people who stole my attention from him. He knew how much I loved him. I know he knew. He knew he was my life mate and I was his, the one who controlled the food and the treats, and finally, the one who could end the pain. That last month, he'd stare intently into my eyes and whimper quietly in the back of his throat. And I knew what he was telling me. I hurt. I'm tired. The slow march toward the end. Pain management and quiet moments together and debilitating grief. An inevitable looming deadline settled heavily into my soul, stinging me when I walked in the door and he remained in his spot on the floor, tail quietly thumping the carpet in lieu of the excited tap dance that was my welcome once upon a time. Fuck that deadline. I didn't want to deal with that deadline. Couldn't fathom being the one to decide when death is better than life for this dog of mine who lived and breathed my life with me since I was 25 years old. Waking up together, going to sleep together, the small things, breakfasts, lunch, dinner, morning walks, sunset strolls, just sitting at the front window watching the world go by. With me for every crucial event that has ever happened to me. Boyfriends, breakups, marriage, births, deaths, Utah, New York, Pennsylvania, divorce. It was as if he waited for that awful year of divorce to be over. He saw me moved and settled into my new place. He hung on for all of it, even when I didn't think he would make it. During those first nights after separating, when the kids were with Serge, it was Max who lumbered up onto my bed and nuzzled me while I sobbed, his body a sponge for my pain. Full circle, just him and me again after all that time. And when I was okay as one can be in the wake of divorce, he let go. The heavy responsibility of deciding when it was time was my job as his mama. What I signed up for when I walked away from his dog family all those years ago, clutching his tiny, shivering body to my heart. And it's how I saw him out, clutching his old, tired body to my heart until the end. Although no longer married, Serge and I came together for the privilege of holding our Maxie boy in our arms as he left this life. We sandwiched his cancer-ravaged body between our bodies, just like we used to sleep together all those years ago in Brooklyn. Lying there on my living room floor as the vet did her thing, Sinatra played softly on my record player, and we cried and rubbed his beautiful black fur and talked into his ears.
You're the best guy I ever had. You're the best friend.
The morning sun streamed through the window, illuminating his tired body until his last breath whispered into nothing, and he was gone.
Looking back on it, though, I mean, it really fucked me up, like, not having those guys around, Max and Milo. And Max was, again, just this advanced level presence in my life. And so to have all of a sudden lost so much and then also lost his company.
I think about him every day. Every single day I think about that dog. It was such a huge presence in my life for so long. Just this
I almost said person, but just this personality that was always there with me. That, and the way he went was really devastating, because I think, you know, we separated in like April, right after Charlie was born, of 2014. And we didn't know he was sick. He went fast. Like, he started losing weight that summer, and then I had him. And I was really pissed at you, and I'm going to be honest and tell you, like, when he was sick, I felt like you sort of avoided it. Like, and I don't know if that's because you were so sad about what had happened, but I was, you know, I was giving him pain medication and all sorts of things were happening, and I didn't feel like you wanted to be involved. At the very end, you came, but I feel like you were avoiding it. And it really hurt me. Even the day that we put him down, I thought we would go have coffee or something. And you were just like, no, I'm leaving.
That was early on in our separation. And it was even before we were officially divorced. And I was completely out of my mind. You know, I was living day to day. I was in complete denial. Yeah, I think I felt like I had to really let go of him. You know, given the circumstances that I was in many ways, I felt like I have lost him too. There was no question as to he was your dog first.
But I never presented it that way.
I know that. I'm not saying that you did. But I think that, again, these are the complications and the different sort of parallel vantages that come into question when two people go their separate ways, you know? And I hear what you're saying. My love for Max never waned. I do look back and wish that maybe I had done more, that maybe I had just got out of this place where I'm still living to this day.
That's not even that. Like, you didn't even, like, I had expected you to, like, maybe come get them and go for a hike or something, and you just didn't do any of that. And it really upset me, and I don't think we've ever.
It was hard for me because, yeah, we probably never have talked about it because, again, like we didn't have these great clear lines of communication going. You know, I often spent a lot of my time alone wondering what the fuck was going through your head. You know, and so I guess I would just harvest all of this complex, radical emotion and channel it through anger and through just kind of maybe being away from you and not speaking to you at times and not being open with you. And when Max, it was probably above my ability to deal with it at the time when Max began to get sick.
When I was telling you he was not doing well, did you believe it? Did you think he was going?
I don't know that I even could wrap my head around the fact that, no, maybe he was dying. No, I don't think so. I thought perhaps, you know, he had been sick before, and I guess you don't really know. I wasn't seeing him on a daily basis, so right. I wasn't seeing the decline. Do I wish I had now? Yeah, of course. You know, do I wish a lot of things. You know, I wish he had never been out of my life, you know, in any capacity. I wish we had stayed married until he died, I guess. As ridiculous as that sounds.
It's weird that you... I've often viewed, I've thought this several times, where Max is sort of like this metaphor for our marriage in a way.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
He was a puppy when we met, and he was there for every single thing, every tiny thing, every huge thing,
everything.
All the kid births and being with our children and letting them pull his ears and tug him, and he just would have that long-suffering look. And then 2014 was so terrible, and that summer was so awful, and he hung on, and I found a place to live, and I got all moved in, and when I finally was all moved in and everything was fine, he went.
Right.
It was like he knew,
right.
And he hung on for as long as he possibly could to see me into my new place, and then he was gone. I think about him every day. I don't...
Maybe his heart was broken.
Oh, stop it.
Maybe it was. I mean, that those kinds of things happen, you know? He might be gone now, but he isn't really gone. Dogs can't just be gone, even when they run away, even when they die, man. Max was already the guy in her life when I met the woman I married a decade ago. And so much has happened, so many memories have come and gone, that for me to sit here and try and write about them now seems almost impossible. But Max was special. Everyone thinks that about their dogs, and so that's why it's true, you see. It's almost like human beings don't quite have that magic sense or that perfect chip up in their head to ever fully comprehend the power of specific love affairs in other people's lives. Some of us try, I guess, but after a while, most of us just forget all about that. We latch on to the stories of love that we can identify with because we can see ourselves in there somehow. Mostly, though, we sit at our work desks doing absolutely nothing, scrolling down the various cyber feeds we scroll down, and we see that someone else's dog has died, or that their husband is sick, or that their kids are playing in a pile of leaves, tossing big fistfuls of them up into a perfectly filtered Instagram afternoon sky. And the moment hits us as something we recognize and maybe acknowledge with a quick jab to the like button. And maybe, just maybe, if we're feeling a little like Gandhi, if we've had enough coffee to be waking up the Buddha, we even leave a brief comment. Sorry for your loss. So cute. You are all in my thoughts and prayers. I'm here for you. It makes sense, and it's all we can do, really. A passing nod at someone else's joy or pain, at their hope or their suffering. It's all we can do to just catch their eye as we pass one another the way we pass one another anymore. Hell, we're escalator people doing our own thing. We're moving between floors without even trying. But when it's us, when it's me or you in the middle of so much happiness or so much hurt, everything is so different. We're the stars in our own galaxy, and I dig that. And that's why every dog is the best damn one who ever lived. Because he was, or she was, in that particular galaxy, they really were. Oh, Max, I cried just typing your name. I love you so much, buddy. We both did. When I first met Monica, I didn't think much about divorcing her. Perhaps in the years to come, people will start thinking about that, I guess. It almost seems inevitable. You'll fall in love, have firecracker sex, refuse to even dream of a world where he or she stops answering your text messages, picking up your calls, and then at the same time, you'll start talking marriage while you poke around at the idea of divorce in the back of your progressive head. But not me. I didn't ever dream that dream. I dreamed of side-by-side graves, the two of us bitching at each other and holding skeleton hands down in the cold, hard dirt. The night I first encountered this woman, this Monica woman, I was taken by her beauty, of course, and by her machine gun giggles. I was impressed by her fancy job and her car and her condo and all that crap, too. But what really got me, maybe because I was a guitar player in a touring band who had nothing to my name but a pirate's life and more on the horizon, what really got me was when she told me she had a dog. And not just any dog, either. She had a black lab, a really young one, and his name was Max. And he chewed up her coffee table books of Frank Sinatra when she was away at work. Oh my God, that was it. I fell in love right away. It does happen, I should know. I wanted to kiss her so hard on the lips right then. I wanted to smash my drunken tongue into her teeth and make her love me for the rest of my life. And I wanted to be her doggy daddy, the dude who walked this pretty girl's Max up and down whatever the hell streets we ended up on. Because dropping down out of the universe like sparkly bird crap that night I first met her, I was hit by the notion that the girl in front of me was something pretty awesome indeed. But this girl with that dog, not with some fluffy muffin pocket pet, but a real live, big, powerful black Labrador retriever, that was all my dreams come true. It really was. Or so I thought. And guess what? I was right. Max and me. A starter's list. Chasing mule deer off-leash in the Provo foothills. Chasing pigeons at McCarran Park in Brooklyn. Mouth-kissing in bed Sunday mornings, his breath so wonderfully dog. Christmas Eve over by the tree, him trying to get at the chocolate I was sneaking in her stocking. Fighting off a pit bull, her jaws scraping at his heart. In the moving trucks, crossing the country, his June hairballs like tumbleweeds on the dash. At the door when I came home from long rock and roll tours, his face happier to see me than anyone's has ever been. Swimming in Utah Canyon streams, chasing tennis balls across snow-covered b-ball courts, him licking the stir-fry bowls, hot peppers and all. Christmas mornings, his stocking of treats. God, what the fuck? I'm crying right now as I write this. I'm not even kidding. The three of us together, the windows down in the car, we're gonna be okay. Bringing Milo home, Max kissing the new black lab puppy like in a dream. Bringing Violet home, Max kissing the new baby human like in a dream. Bringing Henry home, Max kissing the new baby human like in a dream. Birthing Charlie into a pool of water on the living room floor, Max peering over the side like in a dream. The three of us together, back in the day, the windows down in the car, we were gonna make it work. I owe her everything when it comes to him. She found him. She owned him. She loved him and he loved her right back. And then when she decided to love me, she trusted me to love him too. That is some big city fence corner windblown Doritos bag, potato chip bag, newspaper jam up of love and trust, huh? We meet a person and if we're lucky, we melt down into their lives like popcorn butter, even if only for a little while, simply because they let us. We didn't make it all the way to the end. The married people, I mean. But the dog people and the dog did. The three of us, in that light, we did it. We made it to the end. There we were, all three of us together. Together again, our very human tears raining down into his fur, down onto his cancer-coated rib cage, his eyes tired and beautiful like planets in the nighttime sky. I didn't know what else to say. I'm bawling, and I don't expect you to care, but I hope you do, just for a few seconds more, because I need to thank them, both of them. Thank you, 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 thank you. Monica and Max, thank you. Hey, Monica, God, how we loved that dog, huh? And oh my God, girl, how he loved us back. With the heat of 1,000 suns, with the gust of 1,000 winds, we can't divorce any of that. And I know we wouldn't even if we could.
Break a silent arm, baby, to a last request. Winning in the hole, 'cause it ain't happened yet. Guess we had a chance back when we
when you look back on it all, it's kind of like that Dr. Seuss quote that's maybe the most profound quote of all time. And it's like, you know, don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened. And when I look back on, even though it was a crash fucking landing with Max and all of us, my God, what an awesome thing to have happened, to have fallen in love with a dog. You've been listening to Our Ex-Life, our weekly podcast about divorce, co-parenting, marriage, love, life, all that crap. The podcast is produced and edited by Monica Belanco.
Featuring music by Serge's band, Marat. You can find them at marat-usa.com. We also want to hear from you. You can find us at ourxlife.com. You can email us at rxlife@gmail.com or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram under the handle ourxlife.
Thanks for listening.
The Max whistle. I still do the Max whistle. We still do. It's like a family thing now.
That's probably blowing the mic.
Well, I still do that now when the kids come running to the Max whistle still.
Go on, Maxie. Get your ball.